Hi Sandra, utopia. Utopia is not utopia. Utopia, from the Greek utopos, not place, not locality, is like a nowhere's land. Utopia, from u is the good, topos, the good place. I needed to introduce the word utopia instead of utopia because there are a lot of people who are looking for utopistic models or utopistic understanding. I forget which book it was, in which the concept of utopia was introduced as a land where ideal living was possible. But if you then introduce this word utopia as then it doesn't exist land, whatever has been connected as idealistic ideals for a way of living in somewhere that doesn't exist, then for the people reading that, it automatically means that whatever lofty or vital or viable ideas they might be, it will end up nowhere, literally. This has something to do with the way the mind works, and this kind of functioning of the mind is seen and deeply understood in hypnosis. And if you don't know what hypnosis is and can do, just look at the work of Darren Brown and others. The mind can be led to believe all kinds of things, but the mind also has its own structure and its own machinery, as a result of which some things it just cannot do. One of the famous examples is do not think of a red tulip. The first thing that your mind will do for you is to invoke and create and produce the image of the red tulip. So how do you then deal with not thinking about the red tulip, because you've already thought about it? The only way to deal with it is to, having already thought of it, to erase it. And in erasing it, it means that you need to create an inverse picture of a red tulip and put it on top of the red tulip. It is as if you have a painting of a landscape and then you copy a bit of the landscape left and right next to the red tulip in the landscape, and then you paint the reeds and the weeds or whatever it is on top of that piece of cloth that you then stick on top of the red tulip in the landscape, as a result of which you do not think of a red tulip. But that whatever you stuck on there needs to be stuck there with the glue, and in the mind everything is dynamic, so the glue that you stick it with is always on the move. And so when you look around in that landscape, you need to reposition that cover up that hides the red tulip so that you no longer see it. And in the same way, we cover up all kind of things that we don't want to think about or we don't want to know about. So everything that is repressed in memory is put behind one of these moving screens, in which the screen sort of does as if it is something next to it, which it is not. And when you look at that cover-up machinery by which you can repress that idea of the red tulip, which you're not supposed to think about, but you're yet thinking about it, so you need to cover it up with something that is something else. You need to do this double tasking. First of all, you need to fudge up something else that you can put in its place. And secondly, you need to keep on keeping it in place, because who knows what might happen if it starts to move and you see there is a red tulip. All of the taboo principles in society are similar kind of repressions. You're not supposed to talk about sex. You're not supposed to talk about death. You're not supposed to talk about whatever it is in vogue at that time. It is simply that something which is part of life and part of our reality is suddenly given this stigma or this label or this cover-up, this patch, as a result of which you are supposedly not seeing it anymore. But sex, you might say, well, you cannot talk about sex, but everybody's still experiencing sex, having sex, doing sex. And even though now supposedly everybody is free to talk about sex, people don't, because they still talk about the cover-ups about sex. They are so used to have that cover-up that they still have not understood what sex really is and are talking about things which are maybe associated with sex but which are not sex, because their cover-up mechanism has been in place for so long. The same with death and dying. Now, people are now aware that you can't start talking about death and dying, and you can't start to talk about conversations with the dead and what happens at the moment that you're dying. But the old Tibetan understanding of the Book of the Dead, what happens when you are dying, and to experience what you do when you are dying beforehand, is not part of our culture yet. As a result of which, the other side of it, what happens after you died, is not part of our cultural understanding either. So there is this immense and vast nowhere land or no place, the taboo zone, the invisible zone, the denied zone, which we deal with all the time in our life in very many ways. And many of these repressed topics, people don't even know that they are dealing with them, that they're talking about them, that they're denying them by talking about something else instead. Example is the fraud and the fiction of money. People know, because the book Dr. Faustus has been written 4 times already, I think. Marlowe, von Goethe, a couple of others. So people know that money is a superstition. It is not real. It is diabolical. It's a false contract. People know that. But yet they believe in stock exchange. They believe in banks. They believe in bank accounts. They believe in paying with cash or credit. It is all part of the superstition. And once you see money is not real, then all of these principles or mechanisms associated with money, evidently they are not real too. I'm talking about this because at the moment that you say that there is a utopia, a nowhere land, then it is evident that there is a lot of nowhere land within us and all around us. And if we associate nowhere land with the ideals that we have, then these ideals are by psychological association immediately put into that realm of the unattainable, the untouchable, the covered up, the unaddressable, the taboo zone. And then whatever people describe as utopistic ideas, which are actually ideals, then we can see that the so-called utopistic ideals are really good and really wonderful ideas. People with hopes, with ambitions, with well wishings are trying to find solutions for humans and for humanity, but they can never land because they are utopistic. They have no place to land. And NLP and other techniques, of course, show that if you connect an ideal to the concept of utopia or the nowhere land, nowhere place, it goes nowhere, literally. So the introduction of the word utopia is tricky. It is clever. it is useful, it is necessary, because people can immediately understand that utopia is very similar to utopia. But utopia is a place that is, so utopia no longer is a nowhere land. Utopia is so similar to utopia, it might be the same. So utopia could actually be utopia, and then suddenly there is a place for all of these lofty ideas and ideals. So that everybody who can then think up ideas for the betterment of everybody and anybody can then add that to this space of utopia, and in utopia create how they wish to live. And that, of course, makes it possible to do an immediate short circuit to the topic which I've been working on for quite a while, called planting paradise, that all people are invited to be utopists, that all people are invited to create paradise on earth, that people can step out of the hell on earth by simply no longer playing that game. They stop playing that game because they realize that the game is played by people who live in their own little hell. They can stop participating in that by understanding that the people who live in their own little hell have unresolved trauma within them. They have memories, they got stuck in memories which they find to be unlivable. And then having gotten stuck to these unlivable memories, they project that on others and create hell not only for themselves, but also people around them. In the website Planting Paradise, right at the gate, it says that this is an invitation to plant paradise. Because living on Earth, we all have freedom of choice. Every living being has freedom of choice. So you can choose if you want to create hell or heaven on earth. Heaven on earth is called paradise. So you have the choice to create hell, which you can do by yourself and can inflict on others. That infliction takes place by vetico, reflexes triggering reflexes, hurt people hurting people. But creating paradise you can only do with others, but you can only do that if you do that for yourself. And then utopia is simply a different word for paradise. Paradise, many people already know of, but people have been told that paradise is a mythical or a fictitious place. They forgotten that paradise comes from the Persian word paradis, which means garden, which simply refers to earth. So paradise is earth, and earth is paradise at the moment that people stop playing the hell game. They stop living in their own hell by addressing and resolving their own unresolved issues. They find a healing system. We are working on this magic mirror application by which people can find their old hell holes and resolve them and eliminate them. People can help each other get rid of their whole hell, own hell, one hand washing the other. And so when people stop playing the hell games, immediately the space is clear to play the paradise games. Instead of people projecting their unresolved trauma on others, perpetuating the problems, they can then share their solutions. And once people share their solutions, abundance immediately prevails. When people stop using money, which is a debt system, and replace it by a credit system, giving each other credit for what they do, accrediting people for what they do, you're immediately in paradise. You don't need money, you give people credit. You did wonderfully well, you get so many credits. If the money system is fictitious, it's just a number coming out of nowhere, then the credit system can be equally fictitious. It's a number out of somewhere, out of love, appreciation, felt oneness, sharing, and simply turning the hell game of money into a heavenly game of sharing. Swedenborg calls it charity. It's essentially the overflow of abundance. When people are connected to the universe as a whole, the universe feeds them, the universe fills them, they overflow with love, and that love flows between people, and immediately paradise comes to be, because the utopia is there, because the utopia is within people. And that is essentially the whole story of utopia. Utopia is the happy place, and the happy place exists there where you are happy, and if you're unhappy, you fix that. And once you fix that, you're happy. And once you're happy, you meet other people who can then be happy too. And if they're not happy, they're unhappy, you fix that. Then they're happy, you're both happy, everybody's happy, and it overflows. So then the good place is wherever you are, and wherever you go, like the horizon traveling along with you, the good space and the good space feeling travels along with you. So as a source of contagious health, you are then a paradise planter. Wherever you find a dung heap, you piss on it, turn it into compost, so that nature can use it as the fertilizer that comes from nature, for nature, and then the undigested seeds in the pile of shit, in the dung heap, can then come to bloom, flower, and bear fruit. So planting paradise is simply the realization of living in abundance, sharing that with each other, and knowing that that sharing comes automatically if you realize that utopia doesn't exist. Utopia is wherever you are and where you are happy. Not that you are happy because that place makes you happy, but because you are happy and you make that place happy. It's magic. That magic has been told in a different story, and applying magic and making things magical is this story. Live utopia, know that you're the carrier of utopia, because feeling good is something that you feel in yourself. When you feel it in yourself, you radiate it around you, and utopia is all around you.